You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
Michigan football survived Illinois to stay unbeaten, entering an epic showdown with fellow unbeaten and arch rival Ohio State. Need we tease this episode anymore? I don't think so. So let's do this right here on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be back with you here Monday morning, November 21st. And Michigan beat Illinois. It was closer than some thought. I'm trying to remember your guys' scores predictions. I had it definitely in double digits, but I had Illinois covering the number. I know that. Even lower scoring than I think we imagined. Michigan trailed 17-10 entering the fourth, but Jake Moody made a field goal with 12:31 left in the game, another with 3:14 left, and the final and game-winning field goal with 9 seconds left. Michigan wins. Escape, survives, whatever you want to call it, 19-17. What were your thoughts on this one?
Well, first, as the week went on, I realized that I wanted a redo on my picks because I originally picked Michigan to cover, and I think
same,
you know, over the number. And then as the week went on, I'm just thinking more and more about the game. And I'm like, well, it sounds like Chase Brown's going to play, and it's going to be super cold out, so both teams are on the ball. So I'm like, maybe this game is closer than we maybe thought. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Chase Brown looked relatively healthy. I mean, he got almost 30 carries. Illinois was able to move the football. And it ended up being a lot closer than I think some maybe fans had hoped. Maybe Michigan had hoped, given the fact that they did hold some players out. It was a scare. There's no other way to put it. I mean, Michigan played well in the first drive. They're able to go down and score. And then after that, they didn't do much of anything. They had to lean on Jake Moody. They had to lean on the defense in the second half. They all came through, which obviously is a good thing for Michigan. But there was a very real possibility there that they could have lost that game. They took a punch. And it was something we had talked about for weeks now, what they would do, how they would respond. And give them credit. I mean, they bounced back. They turned it around. They won the game. But it certainly took, this time at least, it took all four quarters.
Yeah, I mean, after Illinois went up 17-10 and then Michigan follows to go 3-and-out after that, it's like, oh boy, like this could be the game that Michigan just lays an egg and gets their undefeated record ruined by a team they should beat. But yeah, I was really impressed with Illinois really on both sides of the ball. And again, Michigan's offense, especially without Blake Corum, it does not really scare you very much, as we saw. I mean, I know they were able to score 3 field goals in the fourth quarter, but after that first drive where they found the end zone in 7-play, 75-yard drive, it's like, all right, I mean, it looks like Michigan figured it out. Maybe they're gonna take off and pull out a route, and then sure enough, they didn't find the end zone the rest of the game. So, yeah, important that they pulled out the win, but definitely some question marks moving forward.
There were, 100,000 plus very cold and very nervous fans inside Michigan Stadium. I'd say we could discuss what it really would have meant if Michigan lost that game, but it's pointless. We're already going to do some hypotheticals going forward. There's no point in looking at hypothetical that's in the past that didn't happen. But as far as Michigan's passing game in this one, I don't know. What do you guys make of it? McCarthy goes 18 for 34, 208 yards. No interceptions. This passing attack, it was we've been discussing it for much of the season. Jim Harbaugh has defended it by saying you run the ball until they stop you. Well, Illinois at times stopped them, without Corum, without Edwards on the field. Michigan going third and fourth stringers against an Illinois team that seemed loaded up to stop the run. You'd think they needed to pass to win, and again, they did win. I don't know. It wasn't exactly inspiring what you saw from Michigan through the air.
Let's get this out of the way quickly. it was a windy day. It was blustery, and I think that affected more the passing game than we maybe want to admit. It was a talking point after the game. J.J. McCarthy mentioned it. Jim Harbaugh mentioned it. That being said, I'm not ready. I mean, we've seen enough of this offense in the passing game to not use that as an excuse. I mean, their passing game just hasn't been very good. The receivers have not been very good. And you saw that again play out on Saturday. Yes, J.J. had some ball sale on him. Yes, he wasn't the most accurate, but there were a few drop balls. I mean, there was one that went through the hands of Angelo Anthony. There was one that went through the hands of Roman Wilson.
The Isaiah Gash drop probably would have been at least the first down could have been a possible touchdown too.
Correct. And the fact that they're passing the ball to a fourth string running back at best tells me it kind of is an indictment on how bad the passing game has. You got to lean on Isaiah Gash to do it in the passing game. You got problems. And I think that's part of the issue with Michigan right now. And we've talked about it last week and we warned folks and everything else. They just aren't very good. The receivers aren't getting open. And when they do get open, they're not catching the ball. So it certainly is a concern, especially if they don't have a Blake Corum or a healthy Blake Corum or a healthy Donovan Edwards, because they're going to have to lean on the passing game against Ohio State. And that's exactly what the Buckeyes want to do. So they got issues. I mean, I'm not putting this all in J.J. McCarthy. He could put a little more touch on his balls. He could be a little more accurate. Yes, the wind didn't help him out, but man, these receivers, they got to do more. And I think that's where the issue starts.
And if we're speaking about the elements, though, I mean, Illinois had to deal with the same conditions. And Tommy DeVito went out there and completed 70% of his passes for 178 yards. He had some of his receivers go up. I know that one on the sideline there in at some point in the game, I think it was Washington, went up and made a really nice grab near the sidelines. Like you don't see Michigan receivers doing that for their quarterback. I mean, another quiet day. And yeah, like I remember on that fourth down play, I'm like, why is Isaiah Gash lined out wide? What are we doing here? And then sure enough, I see him go in motion. I'm like, oh, is this just a gimmick or is he going to get the ball? And sure enough, he gets the ball to keep Michigan's undefeated season alive in the first down. But like, yeah, like if you're rotating Gash and Tavier Dunlop and CJ Stokes and when you need to rely on your run game, it's probably not going to work out very well.
Yes, it's point out, Gash redeemed himself a little bit with that grab. I mean, listen, you could talk about Michigan maybe saving, not fully emptying the playbook. I mean, I think that's what Harbaugh's talking about a little bit, too. You stick with basic things until they stop those things, before you need to do these fancy forward passes. But so maybe there are some plays and schemes that are being saved for this coming Saturday against Ohio State. But you don't save, you know, things like accuracy and decision making. Like those are always going to be, you're going to try your best on those things. And that's where there were some problems. I mean, McCarthy at times in particular was, not hitting, not throwing to the right guy. Probably when they're reviewing this tape there's going to be instances where you see you could have had potential, even touchdowns there late in the game. And he chose to throw to someone else. But then, yes, he's not really getting help from receivers either. So, it's troublesome, but again, a major caveat here is who didn't play in this game, who played but then got hurt in this game, and that's kind of where I want to go next, because spinning it forward towards Ohio State, that's a huge storyline really for both sides. So, what can you guys tell me about that? Who didn't play? Who played but got hurt? And here on Monday morning, before talking to Jim Harbaugh, what do we know?
We got different layers to this. So we'll start with the guys who did not play. Donovan Edwards did not suit up, did not play. He didn't play in the second half of the game a week ago. That signals to me that something is serious with him. I would certainly probably put his status for Saturday in doubt. Now, there were two guys that did not play that suited up. Luke Schoonmaker suited up. Mike Morris suited up. They went through pregame warmups. Didn't look like they were doing too much, and they look more like game time decisions, and the decision was to hold them out. So neither of those two played. And then you've got the guy who everyone's talking about right now, Blake Corum. He did play, obviously, and had a very good first quarter and a half, and then he goes down to injury. It was a left knee. We don't exactly know what happened. I don't know if he banged knees, if it's hyperextended. We don't know that point, but we do know, at least according to Jim Harbaugh, x-rays were done at halftime. There was no structural damage, no break. He was ruled he could go back in and play. Now he went back in and played and played. He got in two plays, one carry, and the decision was to pull him. So I saw him yesterday in Sunday afternoon at Ypsilanti giving out turkeys like he did last year. He looked to be limping. He had sweatpants on, so it was tough to tell if he had a brace on or anything else, but he was certainly favoring that left leg. We did talk to him briefly. He said very vaguely he will be back. He didn't say when, but he said he will be back. And then I did follow up and ask if he's going to try and give it a go against Ohio State. And he said, quote, "I will be there." So again, you could take that for what it's worth. Very vague. Obviously, I think Michigan's going to want to see how the week plays out, see how he kind of feels. I'm going to assume he's going to take a few days off of it, not practice, but Michigan certainly got a lot going on health-wise going into Ohio State.
Probably a good sign he was delivering those turkeys when all was said and done. I mean, I know it was a good deed that he looked forward to doing, but at the end of the day, it's about getting the turkeys to the families, right? And once he bought them, someone else could have done it if need be, if he really needed to stay off of that. So that is probably a good sign. But yeah, it would certainly help, if not be critical to Michigan's chances to have him back and ready for that game.
I'd say it's pretty critical to have any chance, but that's just me.
So, yeah. So, and then the others, I mean, again, you want to be at like complete full strength when you're going against a team like Ohio State. And, you know, Edwards, we were talking about just before he got hurt, you know, 2 games ago about, you know, what his kind of resurgence meant for this Michigan offense to have the two-headed monster at running back. And, you know, he certainly helps in the passing game as well. And not to mention, you know, Schoonmaker, and then on the other side of the ball, Mike Morris, you know, arguably in some ways your best defensive player. So, yeah, a lot of key pieces, but Ohio State's got some issues there, as well. So, it really was similar Saturdays for both programs as far as kind of getting a scare from their opponent, and then, you know, having some injuries both, you know, before the game and then during it, leading up to, you know, this showdown. So yeah, they're both 11-0. They're ranked, you know, 2-3 in the polls. I would think, in Tuesday's college football playoff rankings, that will hold as well, with Georgia number one. This is huge, but I want to ask a question here. It's something that Michigan fans don't exactly, you know, of course don't want to happen, but you think Michigan can still get into this college football playoff with a loss to Ohio State?
I do, but a lot would need to go right. I think Michigan would have to lose a close game, whether it's overtime, within a field goal, a couple points. And then you need some teams around you to lose. You need TCU to go down. You need USC to go down. And I think you need like LSU to go down, because at this point, I think LSU is they're surging. I think they're considered the top two loss program. USC is surging. They're coming off a good win over UCLA. But you need some of those teams behind you to lose, so the committee doesn't feel enticed to say, hey, you have a loss. Your strength of schedule wasn't great. And these teams are playing better. So I think, yes, it's possible. I find it hard for a scenario to bring about itself, for it to happen. But yeah, I do think it's possible. But the safest thing for Michigan to do is just win. They got to win on Saturday, and that would, I think, secure their spot. But yeah, I think anything's possible. Whenever you're 1 through, you know, 8 going into the final couple of weeks of the season, if you're in a position to get a good win and potentially play in your conference championship, I think you've got a shot. So I think it's on Michigan to win, and it's on Michigan. And if they don't, I think they need the teams behind them to lose.
Yeah, I don't think it's crazy to think that some of the teams you mentioned will lose, though, moving forward. I mean, USC has Notre Dame this week, and then would have the Pac-12 championship game. LSU is going to have to face Georgia, the number one team in the SEC championship. I think TCU will probably play Kansas State in the Big 12 title game. And I mean, they've squeaked out a lot of wins this year. I mean, I still don't know if they're an 11-0 team talent-wise. And I guess the one team that really intrigues me, let's say all those teams do suffer a loss and Michigan loses, is Clemson. I know they haven't played a tough schedule, but they could still have one loss and be a conference champion too. So if it's between Clemson and Michigan, who loses and doesn't play in the Big Ten championship, but they have a close loss against Ohio State, Do they get in over a conference champion Clemson team that has played a pretty light schedule, but kind of has that track record of being a perennial playoff contender? That would be pretty fascinating to me. But again, yeah, I guess one team was officially eliminated last week with Tennessee going down, but still a lot would need to happen for Michigan.
Yeah, it's important to point out too that say conference championships do matter. The committee has said mm-hmm. that as part of the resume and criteria that winning a conference does help your situation, especially if you're a Power Five conference. So yeah, if you know one of the whether it's 5 through 8, they win out and go to their conference championship and win. Yeah, I think that's certainly going to look like it's going to be a feather in your cap going up against a potentially a one loss Michigan team that did not play in their conference championship.
Sure. I don't know. I think, you know, there has to be 4 teams in this 4-team playoff, right? And Georgia and Ohio State, if they beat Michigan, are locks for that spot. And I'll give you TCU, you know, if they win out. But then that 4th spot, again, it just comes down to USC, who of course easily could have lost to UCLA on Saturday night. They've got two tough games. So they went out and win the Pac-12 championship. I think there's your 4. But if they don't, they take a second loss, that opens up that spot for Michigan to claim, because if Georgia beats LSU, that gives LSU a 3rd loss. And I just don't see Clemson, just the way that game against Notre Dame went, the committee saying that this team is worthy of a playoff spot if Michigan is close with Ohio State. So I think that's how you get, you still get in, but yes, you'd be certainly putting your fate in the hands of other teams around the country and the committee. So you'd rather just take care of business against Ohio State, and we'll have plenty of coverage leading up to that game. But I guess I'd like to get your quick thoughts right away, because mine are that there's no reason Michigan can't win this game. You saw what you did last year, and much of Michigan's style of play is similar. Has Ohio State improved enough in their areas of weakness to overcome that and beat Michigan this year?
While I agree with you, I think they're in trouble if Blake Corum and or Donovan Edwards do not play or not healthy.
Yeah.
And I think both of them are at least in the category of not being 100% healthy. So Michigan needs some type of ground attack. Yes, I agree. I think their offensive line is probably just as good as last year. The running tack might be better than it was last year when healthy. But if those two can't go, or limited, or just aren't what they usually are, Michigan's in trouble. I mean, they're going to have to lean on their passing game, which is what Ohio State wants them to do. That plays right into what Ohio State wants, how they want to play. Michigan can't get into a shootout with them. If they get into a shootout with Ohio State, I'm taking Ohio State's offense any day at this point. So we'll see. In the one variable here is this game is in Columbus. This is a place that I would venture to say 98-99% of the Michigan roster has not been to. Columbus and the Horseshoe is a unique environment. The rivalry is a unique experience. This isn't going to Penn State. This is not going to Wisconsin or going to Nebraska. Some great environments and fun places to play. This is a different beast. And I think some of the players maybe don't know what they're in for. So I think this isn't your typical road game. And that, I think, all in and of itself, I think Michigan is in trouble this week. They need a healthy Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, and I don't know if they're going to get it. And I think that's, at least that's where I stand at this point. Maybe my mind changes as the week goes on. I'd mm-hmm. like to hear from Jim Harbaugh and some of the players. But without Blake Corum, I think Michigan, in a way, they were one-dimensional before. And I think they struggle without him.
And I think a key aspect that we might be overlooking a little bit too is the loss of Luke Schoemaker too. In the 2 games, Michigan has now had to rely on 3 pretty inexperienced tight ends. And we know how much Michigan loves to run those 2 tight end sets. I mean, Colson Loveland was on the field for 72 of 76 offensive snaps on Saturday. And he's a true freshman. I mean, he's been impressive this year, but that's a lot to ask out of a young kid to fill those shoes. And then, I mean, you're also rotating in a walk-on and Max Bredesen and a converted offensive lineman and Joel Honingford as your kind of 3 tight ends there. I know Matthew Hibner got in a few snaps too, but that's the tight end room without Eric All and Luke Stewmaker also is pretty bare. So I mean, with it's, I know a lot of teams have injuries at this time of year, but it seems like with the key guys, Michigan is with could be without. It's tough for me to find a scenario where they can win. But again, yeah, Ohio State's battling some injuries too, and you never really know in this rivalry. But if these guys can't come back and play, it's going to be very tough for them to make it two straight Big Ten East rounds.
My confidence in Michigan winning this game, which you know it was I guess low basically as soon as last year's game ended, knowing how the rosters were probably going to look going forward, and of course where the game was being played, kind of rose almost with each week of this season as Michigan continued to, you know, show what it could do on both sides of the ball. But it did take a little dip, certainly, you know, Saturday after mid afternoon. But you know, then Ohio State goes and struggles a bit against Maryland, and you know, you kind of just realize that, you know, both these teams are really, really good, but they're not great. There might not be that exceptional dominant team in college football this year, though. Maybe Georgia is that team, but yeah, that this game is, you know, I think it sets up to be to live up to the hype, you know, much like the 2006 game when they were both undefeated and ranked, you know, 1 and 2 in that year. You know, I think this has a chance to match the hype, but I agree the available personnel will go a long way in determining that. You know, we will have plenty more coverage of that game from all angles, you know, leading up to the noon kickoff in Columbus on November 26th. But we do want to do a little hockey and hoops talk here to close it. I'll just say this for basketball. You know, they stunk it up against Arizona State in Brooklyn in the championship of that Legends Classic. You know, there are games like that in a college basketball season, 30 plus games. You're going to have most every team's going to have some duds, you know, where just nothing goes right. You know, some good looks aren't falling for you, and basically everything's dropping for the other team. Not to, you know, excuse Michigan's effort, especially early in that game, but still, you know, that's, you're not going to put too much, I guess, concern in just one game. But you know, their bounce back was a little rocky too. You know, last night, Sunday night at home against Ohio, you know, they need overtime to win. You know, kind of a wild sequence to end regulation with, you know, Ohio missing a shot that you think it dooms them, or, you know, that you think is sending it to overtime only for them to commit a foul and Michigan to go ahead. Only for Ohio to throw a length of the court inbounds that hits off the hoop, you know, then lands in the hands of an Ohio player who eventually lays it in.
just how they drew it up.
Yeah, pretty wild. You know, truly, many of us there did think it was going in, including Juwan Howard. He thought it, and he was hoping that it would, because you know, that does not count as a basket. Oh, as impressive as it is, so yeah, they end up winning, you know, in overtime. So you know, credit to them for the way they played in the final 5 minutes. But you know, some poor stretches defensively, and 3-point shooting starting to become an issue. You know, they hit 10, you know, last night, which is a good number. You know, but out of 32 attempts, and you know, that number easily could have been, they could have made 15 or 20 of them if they made even, you know, half of the really open ones. So, yeah, certainly some concerns for this team, but Hunter Dickinson is not one of them. Just another monster game, 24 points, 14 rebounds, and yeah, really, really impressive. So as long, you know, they need to build that kind of help around him as the season goes, and they'll certainly get opportunities to do so. Another one to do so against Jackson State on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving at home, before the schedule toughens up. Virginia, an undefeated team that's already secured, you know, two impressive wins in Las Vegas against Baylor and Illinois, and then, you know, a Kentucky team that's taken a couple losses but is still very, very talented. So, yeah, that's the men's basketball report. And Zook, I know. You know, the hockey team had some hardships this past week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I've had some days to kind of think about the games, and just the fact that they played this week or last week is just still kind of baffling to me, considering the health situation that they have going on within the team. I mean, There's been an illness that has really kind of hampered the team for a couple of weeks now, and they had a couple guys out, including starting goalie Eric Portillo a couple weeks ago against Penn State. But then this week, and there was a Facebook post from a player's mom kind of saying that her son, who's on the hockey team, is at U of M Hospital on a ventilator with complications because of this illness that is kind of spread throughout the team. And it's like, oh my God, like, that's more than hockey right now. Like, that's some serious stuff. Obviously, no one can speak about it on the team because of health regulations. But the fact, and then I get there on Thursday and see the lineup. I mean, they're missing six guys, five regulars. They have their third string goalie skating around in warmups is listed as a forward. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, and they had to cancel practice this week. So it's like, they're obviously not up to speed on a lot of things. Head coach Brandon Arado was like, yeah, we didn't focus on hockey at all week because he's dealing with parents and this, the health of the team. And it's like, well, like, why are we playing the game? And I guess the Michigan health officials cleared Michigan to play both nights. I don't know what the parameters were to allow them to play. I reached out to Daryl Conway, the kind of chief medical officer, chief health and welfare officer for the university, never got a response back to kind of like why Michigan was able to play, because they were shorthanded both nights. And one of the players that played Thursday didn't play Friday because he came down with this illness as well. So it's like, all right, it's still spreading throughout the team. How can you say that it's safe to play? But again, I'm not a doctor. I was shocked that they were able to play with the how shorthanded they were. They did get two guys back for Friday's game that didn't play Thursday. And one of them, I mean, Nolan Moyle actually talked to us after the game too. So props to him. I mean, but you could tell like he wasn't 100%. Coach said he lost like 13 pounds during the week. So it's like, man, wait, what are we doing here? Like, I thought health and safety was the top priority. I know Michigan received a lot of criticism last year for not playing Western Michigan in the GLI. But, like, I mean, man, not being able to dress a full lineup and when not being able to practice all week and going up against the number two team in the country, that's a lot to ask. So, hockey-wise, yeah, they got, not surprisingly, they got swept, lost by three goals both games. Thursday's game, they were right in it, too, and only trailed by one heading into the third period. They had to kill off another minute of a penalty. But they received a bench minor because the players were late getting to the bench, which made it a 5-on-3 to start the period. Minnesota scores pretty much right away and was able to take the 2-0 lead and was able to kind of be in control the rest of the game there. So, I'm sure Michigan's going to drop in the polls. They were number three, probably going to drop a little bit after getting swept. But again, I don't think hockey was the biggest storyline this or last week.
Yeah, I think the Ryan Zook, what are we doing here meter was at three this episode. And that is, I always say, directly correlated to the quality of the episode. The more of those, the wilder things were in Michigan sports. So that's a good thing. Though not in the hockey case, of course, not the kind of thing we want to be discussing by any means. So, yeah, well, of course, you'll have continued updates on kind of the status of that program moving forward. And of course, continued coverage leading up to the game between Michigan and Ohio State this coming Saturday. That will be on MLive.com/Wolverines. Thank you for listening.